Blog Talk Radio.
Firefly Willows LIVE presents Healing Conversations, featuring your host, Mildred Lynn McDonald.
As promised, we're always thinking of ways to bring you a fresh new perspective. Check out this lineup of our newest shows. The Amethyst Oracle, Divination with a Queer Twist, featuring Firefly Willows LIVE favorite, Heisey Lutmers, and his co-host, Charlie Harrington, on the second Tuesday evening each month. A Shamanic Life, hosted by John Carosella, on the first and third Tuesday evenings each month. The brand new Embracing Change, The Joy of a New Path, with career coach Ivan Teams and John Carosella, the fourth Tuesday evening of each month. What's Your Prescription for Balance, with Mildred Lynn McDonald and her co-host, Dr. Glenna Calder, the first Thursday afternoon each month. And Evolve, with Robin White Turtle Lisney, the third Thursday afternoon each month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows LIVE.
Good morning, everybody. We're here in beautiful Los Altos in Studio G with my co-hosts, Deb Carosella.
Morning.
John Carosella.
Hello.
And Heisey Lutmers.
Hello.
I'd like to welcome everybody here today, and we have an intriguing topic that you might want to sit back and ponder as we have our little discussion. The topic for today is home and sense of home and how you create a sacred, silent, nurturing, and supporting space in your home that's not a pit stop. It's not a place to gather possessions, and it's not a place where you go in between rushing around in your life. So what I'd love to do is invite John and Deb and Heisey to share a few tips on how they create a sense of home. Who'd like to start off?
That's a cool topic, Mildred Lynn. The first thing, the very first thing that came to my mind was my garden. And, you know, we live in suburbia, so we have enough yard to have a variety of different places where we cultivate the soil and grow things that we choose. But I think anybody can do that. You know, you can have a flower box by the window. You can just have potted plants. I think there's something about being intimate with the growing processes of the planet that, for me, it's very grounding and it's very soothing and it's very peaceful. Plants are more yin than animals, right? You know, because they basically exist where they're placed. If it's where the seed falls and that's where they sprout, then that's where they are. And there's a kind of serenity or a tranquility associated with that, that it comes from just recognizing that this is your place, right? And being around them and cultivating their growth and cultivating their beauty in and around my home makes me feel like I'm in partnership with that tranquility and that serenity. And so it works really well for me. The other thing that I would say that I do, and this is going to sound a little funny, is I go barefoot.
Oh, my. Nice.
You know, again, it's being in contact with the ground, with, you know, feeling grounded and, you know, having the grass between my toes and feeling the dirt. And it's just something about that's, to me, is a kind of sacredness that is very real.
So you're suggesting that our listeners in Canada consider going barefoot in the snow.
Absolutely. Hey, I lived there for a while. I know what it's like.
And believe me, you don't go barefoot in the snow.
So John, if you envisioned your home with plants and you envisioned your home without plants, what would be lacking in the home without plants?
Oh, yeah. Life force. A very real kind of intimacy that is born of that life force that exists in plants would be absent. And you know, if there's no plants in and around your home when you're not home, to me it feels like an empty shell.
Mm.
And but if you know, and that's not necessarily true for everyone, but you know, because you can have your sacred items, you can have an altar and all those kinds of things, but there's something about the earthiness, the simplicity, and the truth of living beings, you know, in and around your home, that are going to be there. And I just think that's very special.
Now, I think it's a good time in our program to invite our guests to hear about our two special guests here of the four-legged kind. Steph, would you like to introduce our two little buddies?
Well, you heard Jester's input on what is important in the home for him.
Squirrels.
Yes. And so Jester and his brother, who is being very good and very quiet, Pippin, happen to be sharing our studio space with us today. So those are the little noises you're hearing.
And that's a good segue for your input, because I know how much you love animals.
It is. Actually, that's true. For me, home wouldn't be home. It would definitely be a pit stop, a place where my possessions resided without the animals, without the four-leggeds. Besides Pippin and Jester, we also have Tucker, who's being exceptionally quiet and good. And then we also have three cats. So we have lots of little four-leggeds running about, and they impart their own, much like plants and growing things, they bring their own sense of life and their own sense of community to the space. And not everyone is interested or needs or welcomes that other community. But for me, it's important. It's really, really vital. Besides the opportunity for me to nurture, which is very important and creates a fuller space for me, I get something back from them. The welcoming and not unconditional acceptance and love creates a safety, a space of safety, an island of serenity that makes the home, and not just a very pleasant place to be, a very pretty place to be. So for me, that's very important.
So John, it's plants for you. Deb, it's animals for you. Now over to High C.
I take a different perspective on the meaning of home. I don't think of a physical place or structure as home versus the space that I inhabit and the energy that fills that space around me is home, whereas the physical structure is a house, but I carry home with me. And therefore, any place that I'm at can be home, based on the energy that I carry and then how that energy fills whatever space that I happen to be in. So I tend to think of any place as home, depending on whether I choose to imbue it with that or not. So if I'm commuting to work in my car, I make the inside space of that car a refuge or home by playing things like podcasts or meditations, although I'm not doing a meditation while driving, or things that are feeding me spiritually, so that even if I'm sitting in an hour commute, I'm not sitting in stress, I'm not sitting in anger at why aren't these cars moving faster, or anxiety about I need to get home, you know, for such and such, versus I'm just filling that space and making that space my home for the moment, so that I don't allow myself to go into some sort of negative thought space or energetic space or emotional space that then would create a negative energy and space around me. And even when I'm in my house, I do the same thing. I'm very selective as to when I have sound in my house. I tend to have quiet much more, and I'm very selective as to when I have music on or when I have the television on, rather than just having sound on all of the time for the sake of sound. Because quiet and silence to me are very conducive to that sense of home, because it means again that I'm listening to myself rather than getting drowned out, and I'm sitting in my space being with myself and whatever is coming up or whatever is happening in that space for me, rather than being distracted by something else in that space.
So, Heisley, it sounds like you put time and attention into creating your sacred space. So if you were going to offer some guidance to someone else there who's saying, oh, I really like what Heisley has to offer, what would you suggest to them as a first step? And I'm going to ask Deb and John the same question.
Well, I would say pay attention to what you're filling that space with.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what kind are you, do you have noise just because it's on or just for the sake of sound in the space? Or are you consciously and conscientiously choosing what sound is filling that space? And is that sound something that is nourishing, uplifting, energizing, calming for you? So even when I play music or something else, like in my house, I'm very particular as to what I choose to play based on what energy I want to fill that space with in that moment. Even in the car, it's being very conscientious rather than just turning on the radio and letting it play whatever is on in the car. I will generally not turn on the radio just because I don't have control over what people are saying or what's going to be coming through. So I will listen to either music or podcasts or something from my phone in my car so that I'm in control. And I think that's a big thing, making sure you stay in control of what you're filling your space with rather than letting your space get randomly filled with things and with energy that aren't necessarily conducive to who you are or what you would want.
That sounds really good. How about you, John? What about someone's listening? They like the idea of having more plants or a plant in their home. Where would they start?
Well, before I go there, I'm just going to say, turn off the TV. You know, I've been in people's homes where the TV is on some news channel, some, you know, 24-hour news channel or whatever, all day, or they have the radio thing, you know, their cable gives them access to music, and they have that playing. And when I go into those homes, I literally feel a jarring discomfort from how the space is filled with the energetic vibe that is not thoughtfully constructed, right? It's like feng shui. It's like really bad feng shui to just have the TV on or something like that. And so I guess I like plants because they're quiet. Look for the sunny spot in your home, in the kitchen where you spend a lot of time. If you're, you know, if you have a family,
mm-hmm.
Behind, you know, along the kitchen sink, or just give yourself the luxury of having a little spot where you're nurturing some plants. It's really that simple. If you can do it outside, you know, if springtime comes, get out there and get your hands dirty. Get your hands in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I personally love to plant things that produce food. So I'm a vegetable and fruit kind of person, gardener. But if you're a flower person, that's fine too. Just pay attention to them.
Yeah, I like the idea of having it in your home, maybe in the kitchen. And that plants don't talk. I haven't thought about that before. And what about you, Deb? If someone was interested in bringing a little four-legged heartbeat into their home, what would you suggest?
Well, I think probably not everyone has the ability or the time, or they're just not able to necessarily have a living, breathing animal that requires responsibility and commitment. So for me, if you can't actually have a living, breathing, four-footed, warm-blooded animal, or even a fish-type animal that brings you comfort, is the next equation. Because for me, they are comfort. So find that thing or that area or that space that is comfort to you. You can have a beautiful photo shoot home, but if you don't have a space in there that is yours, that you don't care if you kick off your, you know, you put your dirty shoes on or whatever, something that is truly your place, your comfort, that is what I would suggest. Find that spot that means, or that thing that means comfort to you, and make sure you have it near and accessible.
Excellent.
What about you?
Yes, we have.
Oh, I was enthralled with what you guys were saying. I have to share, my area to create a sanctuary is in the area of color.
Mm-hmm.
And combining colors and shapes. And I love glass that sunbeams can radiate through. So for me, I take pieces of glass and I place them, I organize them around the house so that the sun can stream through at different times during the day and create beautiful effects.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have that, and I have that placed in several areas, it distracts me in the most wonderful way. It doesn't matter what's going on. As soon as my eye hits that beautiful glass with the sun going through it, it gives me a sense of awe and wonder.
It's enchanting.
It's enchanting, and automatically that enchantment colors everything else that I see for that moment. And if I feel down or if I'm concerned or stressed about something, it lifts me up. So that would be how I strive to create a sense of sanctuary and sacredness in my home.
And that's pretty easy to do, you know, by sun catchers or, you know, little crystals that you hang in the window. And
exactly, yeah. So I'd like to thank John and Deb and Hi C for a wonderful round table. Please stay tuned for the rest of the show, and we'll bid you adieu from Studio G in Los Altos.
Well, that's our roundtable for this week. Many thanks to Mildred Lynn McDonald and participants Deb and John Caracella and Heisi Lutmers. We hope you found this roundtable discussion engaging and thought-provoking. If you would like to join the conversation, visit facebook.com/fireflywillows and add your comment under this week's roundtable post. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and I'm your host for Healing Conversations, live from Sebastopol, California. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we hope that you're enjoying the show. Have you ever considered that there's a powerful connection between what is in your home and what is in your life? If yes, you'll love our chat with author Sarah Brown Crowder, as she shares the story behind her book, House Heal, Transform Your Life Through the Power of Home. Find out what awareness, desire, and willingness can do for you. Plus, I'm sure you'll enjoy Sarah's tips, real-life stories, and her personal guidance. And then, in our new Soul Nudge segment, we'll offer fresh-as-a-daisy perspective on how to navigate life's prickly patches with some homegrown advice called Got Criticism? Always remember the source. So please, mark your calendars, grab a nice cup of tea, and join us the first Sunday of every month at 10:30 Pacific for Healing Conversations, where we hope to explore the mind-body-spirit connection through a nourishing combination of inspiring conversations, hands-on personal growth tools, and a sprinkling of East Coast humor and warmth. And now, without further ado, let's beam over to Toronto, Canada, and welcome our special guest, Sarah Brown Crowder, author of House Heal, Transform Your Life Through the Power of Home. Sarah, hello there.
Hello, Mildred Lynn.
How are you today?
I'm doing very well. I was listening to John, and I think I want to go running through the garden in my bare feet, too.
I know. It's hard to resist, isn't it, when Earth calls?
There is something to be to being grounded, and that's actually, I'll get to that. That's a very much a part of my teaching with House Heal. So.
Excellent. So how's the weather in Toronto today?
Sunny, beautiful, and everything's growing in the gardens, finally peeking through. So this is our first really beautiful spring weekend.
I guess you can smell spring in the air.
We can. And it's a time when everybody gets out and we get our energy, which is a perfect time to be talking about home, because this is when everyone starts paying a little more attention.
Yeah. Now, Sarah, I read your book. I loved your book. And what came to my mind as I was flipping the pages and absorbing your messages, your wonderful messages related to home, is what inspired you to create House Heal?
Well, that's what I love about how this came to be, because it found me. And when I look back, it was a natural progression of many years of learning and growing, but it really came by surprise in its form. Several years ago, my husband left a corporate job and got his license to become a realtor, and he's very good at it, and his business grew, and I began going with him to meet with his real estate clients to help them to get their home ready to sell. And probably everybody listening has either seen that on TV or experienced, and you know what's involved in making your home beautiful and tidy and getting things in good repair for selling a home. And I found out that I loved that. I had a talent, and eventually people started asking me to help them when they weren't selling their home. And I went out, got business cards printed, and started to put word out, got clients, and it took about 3 consultations before I discovered that getting one's home ready to sell is very different from getting it ready to live in. So even though it's very similar, you want to, it's about getting your home to be beautiful and in good repair. But for some reason, I found that people doing it, trying to accomplish pretty much the same outcome for themselves when they weren't moving, just did not happen. People's thoughts, their emotions got in the way. So that was the inspiration. And then I could see people's pain. I knew that they really wanted to make changes. And I realized that me trying to help them one-on-one wasn't going to be the answer. So I started drawing on my 25 years of personal growth and healing and saw this amazing, beautiful connection, which you spoke about in the introduction, this unbelievable energetic connection between one's home and emotions, thoughts, energy, and everything just kind of grew from there.
So, Sarah, do you feel that this talent, this passion was innate in you and latent? It needed an opportunity to blossom, or do you feel like you always had it? How did that shake out for you? You mentioned you've been into a lot of personal growth and you've studied that area. So for our listeners out there, someone may have a 9-to-5 job or a corporate job or a teaching job or a health job or whatever, and there may be a spark of something, because when I'm listening to you, it sounded like definitely an ah moment, and nobody seemed to be more surprised than you.
Well, yes, and I think it, I was very lucky in that I had a personal crisis young in life, so that was my that was my moment. Some people have it later in life. I in my late 20s had had a dream job that turned into a nightmare, and so it was actually having the most difficult time of my life got me to thinking about what I wanted. And so I took a step back and decided that no matter what, somehow I was going to find a way to be really happy and feel comfortable being myself. And I didn't know anything. I had to go looking in little esoteric bookstores, and the information that is available now didn't exist. So it was much harder then to go looking, but mm-hmm. I was absolutely determined. And I think it really is that choosing to be happy, and for me, I knew that the decision gets you started, but it's a path, it's a progression, it's not something that happens overnight, and it's not something that ever finishes. And you can learn all the theories, but it's how to put that into daily life. And that's why I absolutely love the context of home, because even though it's about home, it's really in the essence not about the stuff, the physical, but it's how you feel. And I loved the discussion just before we started talking about being in control and paying attention, because it is that it is that awareness, you know, when John is talking about being grounded. Well, for a lot of people, they don't know what it feels like to be grounded. And so if you can use your home as the place to start practicing, does this feel good to me? Does this feel right to me? Then that's going to carry through to every area of life, because as important as home is, it's the foundation, it's the place that they, it's sort of your launching pad for the rest of your life. And so the more peace, beauty, joy, feeling very comfortable and safe in your own home gives you the energy, the courage to go out and make good decisions and be out there living life fully outside of home also.
Now, I imagine once you achieve the goal or the beauty of a grounded home environment, when you would look back to a time when you were destabilized and didn't have that, you would wonder, how did I ever get through the day?
Absolutely. But what happens is when, because a person is energetically connected to their home, often they can't see what's going on. They might have some awareness that their home is messy or cluttered, or it can actually be a beautiful home. It is absolutely possible, and you don't have to look very far to find people who are living in showcase homes who are inside very unhappy. So it's the whole package. It's about having a home, however it is, and it doesn't have to be a house. It can be an apartment. It can be a room. It can be a traveling space. It is wherever you are, wherever you're making your home for the moment, that aware of how you feel about yourself. And so when things are in a seeming state of chaos, often it's because your thoughts are in a state of chaos. And what I teach in my book is what I call receiving condition. You know, first I talked about selling homes, which is something else, but is your home and your energy aligned to you, drawing to you the experiences that you want? So as you become more aware, your house has no choice but to change. It still requires the physical work, but that physical work of clearing, tidying, whatever, does become easier.
So for our listeners, you have two terms. You have a house that is in show condition and a house that's in receiving condition. So can you share maybe with an example or some commentary about those two concepts? Because I found them neat.
Yes. Well, I think, and this is, it makes it very easy for people to relate to when we start talking about show condition. And I know that show condition is for selling a home technically, but because people are familiar with the process, again, if they haven't experienced it personally or with a friend or family member selling their home, the television programs are the television airwaves are filled with shows about helping people get the most money for their home, and it's about repairing things that are broken, making sure things are beautiful, often clearing things out. We've had clients fill several storage lockers full of things, so it's clearing out what is not necessary. And what I always say is, okay, for selling your house, it may be extreme in that you have to keep it in perfect order all the time and that you might take away a lot of the personalization, but all of the other pieces, you know, when would it not be in your best interest to live in a home that is beautiful, organized, clean, and in good repair? That is always going to serve you. So it's about finding that balance and having the energy that is drawing to you. For example, you know, if you have a beautiful dining room, you want to be enjoying that space with friends, with family, with beautiful food and good conversation. It's not about the paint color, it's all of those elements that contribute to creating that environment. And it can be very simple or it can be as fancy. There's no right or wrong. It's what you choose.
Mm.
And people aren't always comfortable with the idea that they choose. You know, I always say that my teaching is about, you know it or not, like it or not, you are the creator of your life experience. And when you can understand that your home is the reflection, I explain this by saying that your home does not reflect who you are. Many we've grown up being told that your home reflects who you are. And I always say, no, it doesn't. Your home reflects how you are. It reflects
I love that.
How you are and the degree to which you've learned to use your natural ability to create what you want in life. So a house that seems out of control is simply a reflection that you have not yet learned to trust your natural instincts to align the energy. And often it's just a matter that we haven't been taught. I use a continuum in my book, if you can imagine a line, and on the left-hand side is the state of being oblivious, where you're just going along, you're just living life and you don't know. And then there's the other side on the right, being obsessive. You have people, and you see this especially with home, where someone is really into decorating or organized, and they're trying to organize their home so much that they're really not allowing themselves to take pleasure in it. So it's about being somewhere in the middle where you have a healthy awareness and life is moving and there's momentum. So often for people to learn, and this is the feedback, the beautiful feedback that I get from people who read my book, it's this awakening of, I get emails from people saying, I'm only on chapter 2 and everything feels different already, because they're realizing all of a sudden that they do have some say, they do have some influence, and especially the way my book lays out step by step, and very encouraging. It explains the process, but also taking away the self-judgment and self-criticism, because much more harmful than any clutter in one's house or dirt is the little voice in your head telling you that you're bad or wrong for it being that way.
Yeah. Now, Sarah, have you come across people? I'm looking at the concept of show condition. I'm drawing the connection to people watching shows on TV, home improvement. And what occurred to me in the moment as you were speaking so eloquently about your concepts and your books is that a person may look at their home and compare it to an ideal that's being presented on TV and become confused, meaning that their inner voice is being squished down because they're listening to this external voice. Have you run across that as you worked with people or shared home space with people, that there may be a confusion about what their home needs to look like to reflect their inner self, that they're getting that information from somewhere that's not relevant or doesn't apply? How did that shake out for you?
Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And that's probably the most important part of the teaching and the learning is letting go of this idea that your house has to be a certain way, and or that it matters what other people think of your home. It's not about having your home look like ones in the magazine, although very often over time that's what will happen, because as you start to step into your power, things start to shift and change, and as you start to feel better about yourself, then it becomes easier and easier to make changes at home. So it is letting go of the idea that if I have my house a certain way, then I'm going to feel better. And in one of the workshops, there are certain moments that stand out, and one of them was when a person in the very first class said, "Oh, I get it. I thought I was coming here to make my house nicer so I would feel better about myself, but it's really about feeling better about myself so that that's reflected in my home." And I said, "Yes, absolutely, that when you feel good about yourself, when you treat yourself with respect and understand that life in every detail is yours to choose, then it doesn't matter to you if someone else likes your paint color or someone else likes your furniture. What matters is how you feel and what's happening in your home. Is your home drawing to you wonderful experiences?" And again, you know, for someone, that might be quiet. For Heisi, it might be quiet. For another person, that might be lots of gatherings and parties and hosting, and it may be different things at different times of life. So whatever it is that you want to create at home, whether it's creativity or cooking, or does your home support you? And forget about all the magazines and articles and use them for inspiration and ideas, but not as a measure to see if you're good enough. And that can be huge. That's not just a conversation. That's not an aha. Usually when somebody has that pattern, they've been thinking that way for many years, and maybe were brought up feeling like they had to measure to an outside standard. And so that's where this is. I teach baby steps, be gentle with yourself, and understand that some of these patterns, some of this energy that's being injected into your home on a daily basis through your thoughts, that it needs to change over time. It's not, you're not looking for a quick fix. You're looking for a gentle, step-by-step shift. And even recognizing just that, I've had people tell me that the relief that lifts off them when they realize that there is no hurry. It's not about achieving a certain standard. It's about making the shift to feeling good about yourself. So that's kind of huge.
I love the step-by-step. Really like that. And as you were speaking, it reminded me when you were talking about how you were brought up or maybe your culture. And I'm sure many of our listeners can relate to this. Keeping the good china or the good dishes or the good linens tucked away until guests arrive.
Yeah.
And I remember a friend of mine, her name was Margie Carver Borden from Cape Breton Island. She, when I would go to her lovely heart-centered home, she would always have the good china and good linens out, and I would say, "Oh, it's only me, Margie. You don't have to pull that stuff out for me." And she looked at me once and she said, "Well, who's better than ourselves?"
Yes.
And I remember that moment, I just stopped in my tracks, because she truly is a person. When you walk into her home, it reflects her inner self, and she attracts wonderful things into her home environment. And I learned a great lesson there, and I'm sure other people listening may have had a similar experience. And to me, when you walked into her home, it was an example of a home in receiving condition. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, receiving condition is, I talk about having, there are three important components, and all three are necessary to achieving receiving condition, and necessary in sequence. And receiving condition sort of evolved when I was speaking to a group of professional organizers, you know, people who are paid by the hour to go in and help people clear with things. And I was giving a workshop talking about the emotional strings to things. And two-thirds of the conference came to my little workshop to talk about that topic, because they were experiencing that someone could say, "Yes, I want to clear things out," and be willing even to pay somebody to work with them. But even making that phone call and being willing to pay did not give them the emotional freedom to clear things out. And so it's it is about being emotionally ready. So the first part, and we've been talking about that, is the awareness. And it's not just noticing what's in your home, but what we talked about before about that being aware of how you feel and going back to being grounded. If you don't know what it feels like to feel good, then you're not going to be able to make the simplest decisions about what to do, what to keep, what to look for. So you really need to be aware not only of what's in your home, but aware of how you feel and the connection between the two. Because until you are able to see, and again, this awareness, it comes incrementally. That's the one thing that I've come to understand in my teaching is that people have their own speed. It's their own pace, and whatever that is, that's just fine. So as you become aware of what's in your space and your thoughts, then you can move into the second key, which is desire. What do I want? And I always teach the awareness first, because what happens, especially if somebody's trying to make changes in their home, if they start to think about what they want, there's very often a track of thought that is saying, well, I can't have that because I don't have enough money, or I don't have enough time to do that, or other people in my house aren't going to allow me to make that happen. So we have this track of self-defeating, self-critical track. So every time we go to think about something that we want, we've got this little voice telling us why we can't have it. So that's why we teach awareness first, so that as you become aware of your thoughts and your feelings, you can catch yourself and gently say, oh, look at that little voice telling me I can't have that, and go into that feeling of knowing that everything is your creation. As I said before, you know it or not, like it or not, you are the creator of your life experience. Whether you're oblivious to that fact or not, we are each creating our own life experience. And when you begin to trust that, then that second key of desire, you can start to think about what you want. And again, going back to the principles, all of this teaching is principle-based. So the brain cannot tell the difference. If you're thinking about something, your brain thinks that you want it. So that's why we're really trained to focus on creating. And once you know what it is that you want in your home, whether you want a beautiful living room, a beautiful kitchen, or a dining room table that you can actually see or find so that you can have people over, it's thinking about that and having that feeling and feeling excited about it rather than feeling overwhelmed at what has to happen to get to that point. So being able to think about what you want in a way that feels exciting, even when you don't have a clue as to how that's going to come to be, it really starts to shift your energy, your feeling, and you start to feel safer thinking about what you want.
Yeah, so I'm going to go back a little bit for our listeners. So in the awareness stage, would it be useful for people to monitor or observe themselves having negative thoughts? That's what I'm getting. So, for example, if I would really, really like a new, beautiful new quilt for my bed, and I may give myself the message, I'll never find the beautiful quilt, or I'm not very good with color, or they might be too expensive, I'm automatically denying myself something.
Exactly.
There. So what you're suggesting is to just be aware step by step when you give yourself those non-life supporting or negative or withholding messages. So that's one thing our listeners can do. And then the next step would be, once you're aware of that, to give yourself the gift of enjoying the thought and the feelings of actually finding that quilt and making your thought patterns go that way. So maybe an example of that would be is, I can I can just see that beautiful green and blue yellow quilt on this bed made lovingly by some gentleman or lady in a beautiful area. And when I get that, that's going to bring so much joy to myself and others. And it's, I know I'm going to find it. Would that be an appropriate desire?
That would be totally appropriate, and have that feeling in your body like this is, it's on its way to me. And again, the home is such a wonderful place to practice because there are hundreds of items to practice with that don't require a lot of money. So it could even be with awareness, it can be creating something. It can also be opening your drawer to the kitchen drawer to make dinner and noticing that the spatula that you pull out is rusted and old, and delighting in the fact that haven't noticed that before and now you do notice, so you can give yourself credit for being more aware, and then going out and looking for a replacement. And again, not just going out and buying the first one, but using that as an opportunity, even if you're only going to spend $10, of looking at the different choices, what kind of handles there are, what kind of materials, and practicing noticing the feeling in your body that says, yes, I like that one. So it's really about training yourself to recognize that feeling, whether it's, you can call it intuition, your gut, and so you become more comfortable noticing that and trusting it. So then you begin to use that unconsciously. So whether it's deciding things in the house or whether it's deciding to go where to go on vacation, you have that skill set of being able to make a decision that is in line with what you truly want. So that's exactly the process.
Sorry, go ahead.
And then the fun begins, because then you get awareness. So you've begun to notice what's in your home. You've begun to notice your thoughts and the connection between the two, and you've started to think about what you want. And that's where the third key comes in, which is willingness. Are you willing to do the work to actually make things happen? And where people sort of get caught up on the willingness is, especially with home, you think, oh, well, I'll just jump into action. And really sometimes jumping into action is like the worst thing that you can do unless you've really done the work ahead of time. For example, if you've been wanting to clean out your closet and you think, okay, I'm going to block off Saturday morning and I'm going to spend 3 hours cleaning out my closet. Because of the emotional sort of package of what's in one's closet, whether it's clothes that don't fit anymore or money you've spent or memories that come with certain clothes, often that can be overwhelming. So it's willingness to take things step by step and to release the thought patterns and emotions that go along with things in your home. Now, sometimes it's really easy. If somebody's been thinking about this for a while and they've been working and they just need a little nudge, sometimes people can make great strides. But often, especially if people have a lot of things to deal with at home, it can be overwhelming. And so that's why it's really important to be gentle and understand that if things are accumulated because of emotional patterns that have been going on for a long time, it's going to be step by step. So I always teach, start with 5 minutes, start with 10 minutes. Maybe if you're feeling really energetic, spend 15 minutes on something that has been on your list for a long time, and then move on to something else, or go for a walk. Go and walk barefoot in the garden and get yourself back to a place of feeling good, because it's always taking yourself back to feeling good when you start to take action in your home, because your home is full of, especially, you know, if you're living with other people, you've got all their emotions too, and so it's really important to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. So awareness, desire, willingness, I love that step, willingness. Maybe what we'll do right now, because it's wonderful information, and I know if I was the listener on the other end, I'd want just a few minutes to process that in my being. So we're going to take a little break. We're going to listen to a beautiful tune from Cape Breton Island called The Creative Island, very appropriate for our theme today. Then we're going to do a little public service announcement, Firefly Willows Live. Every show that we have, we try to promote some form of animal sanctuary. And then, Sarah, we're going to come back to you, and we're going to talk about the characteristics of the yellow zone, the green zone, and the red zone. How does that sound?
Wonderful, wonderful.
Okay, have a nice little break. Grab yourself a cup of tea, and we shall be back shortly.
A rock and a stream, we live in a painting. The island is shaped by what the wind sings. Salt of the earth is the lake at the heart of the island, portrayed by the tune played on your heartstrings. How to explain it? To explain it is to feel it. If you feel it, you can hear it. You need to be here to feel it.
Firefly Willows, LIVE, is proud to support Brighthaven, a non-profit holistic animal retreat founded in the early 1990s by Richard and Gail Pope to provide sanctuary to animals in need of specialized treatment and elderly care. Brighthaven also acts as an education center for the community, sharing knowledge of holistic healing for animals. In 2010, Brighthaven expanded into the world of animal shelter rescue with Brighthaven Rescue Operations, placing animals at risk for euthanasia into foster and forever homes. Discover more information and how to donate at brighthaven.org. This tip of the week from the Brighthaven Sanctuary. Classical veterinary homeopathy is flourishing precisely because it works. Consider using a classically trained homeopathic veterinarian for the care of your animals. You'll be enabled to make better informed decisions by looking at health and disease from a broader, holistic perspective, thus ensuring the best therapeutic outcome. Be careful, though. You may see astonishing results of better health and longevity.
Sarah, we're back.
Hello.
Hello again. Wanted to let our listeners who are just joining us now let you know that you're listening to Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn McDonald, and we're here with Sarah Brown Crowder, and we're talking about her book, House Heal. So, Sarah, we covered show condition, receiving condition, awareness, desire, willingness, and now we're ready to zoom into the area of zones, yellow zone, green zone, and red zone. So can you share a little bit about those concepts and how they can help our listeners?
Well, yes, and I think that this, Mildred Lynn, is one of the most practical parts that people can relate to. I've even had children who get this and understand and want to go home and make changes in their own rooms. So this is very simple. So we're talking about receiving condition and having wonderful things come to you. And if you imagine that your home and all of that energy in it acts like a traffic light to the universe. So the universe is there ready to bring you everything that you want, and that vibration, that energy that you're sending out through your home, how it looks and feels, has a huge influence on what becomes your life experience. So, for example, again, going to the traffic light, if you think of a red light when you're driving, it says stop, you're stuck. You know, I don't know what the rules are. I can't remember the rules in California, but here we can turn right on a red light. So even if you can turn right, you're still kind of going in circles. I love. So a red zone in your home is going to be places that are messy, dirty, cluttered. It might be dark, things that are broken. There might be a lot of noise. We were talking about sounds in your home earlier in the show, where there's electronic noise or music playing too loudly. And often there's too much stuff. So if you can think of places in your home that fit that description, just spaces that feel overwhelming, and very often spaces like that don't feel very good either. You know, if it's a room that maybe you go into and you don't sleep very well, or people don't get along with each other, or you don't seem to be able to get anything done, you just kind of feel stressful. So those are the red zones. And the important thing with these zones, well, I'll go back, I'll describe the three, and then I'll come back and sort of talk about the emotions, because that's really the important part. So a red zone, you can, listeners can get an idea of the red zone. Now, when you're driving and you get a yellow light, you know, what do you do? Some people accelerate and go through like it's a green light, and other people sort of step on the brakes and stop. But whichever you do, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but it doesn't give you that sense of ease. Now, a yellow zone in your home is sort of the same. There's nothing wrong with it. Yellow zones typically are fine. They're relatively clean, relatively tidy. There might be a little too much stuff, a little not enough stuff, or everything might be just sort of overly matched. I like to say that yellow zones can sometimes look like you went to a furniture showroom and bought the showroom. It's not really personal, and it's fine, but it's just okay. And then the green zones, which I'm sure you can guess is what we're aiming for, the green zones, like the green light, you sail through. You still have to pay attention and make sure everybody else is doing what they're supposed to be doing, but the green light is flowing, gives you a sense of ease, like you're moving forward. And the green zones, similarly in your home, they feel good, they look good, and good things happen in the space. So okay. So that's, if you can imagine, and one of the first things that I ask people to do is draw a rough floor plan and identify the zones. Now, some people get a little overwhelmed with that, and again, I go, no judgment. This is not for you to assess your home. It's just, again, to build that awareness so that you can figure out what's there and where to start. So,
yes, Sarah, I just want to stop for a moment and go back, because this, if our listeners, as I was listening to you, I had different rooms come into my mind as examples. So based on hearing people talk, I would say often a red zone could be maybe a closet or the garage.
Yes.
These tend to be areas, common areas for people. I've rarely heard someone say, oh, my closet brings me such delight. It's so well organized and has wonderful life force energy. And nor have I heard the same about the garage. So they seem to be catch-all areas. So that's what came into my mind as you were speaking on the concept.
Well,
and
you
go ahead.
No, I was going to say you're probably way ahead then, because I often have people say my entire house is a red zone.
And then as you were talking about yellow, what came into my mind was a guest room.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I hear people say, my guest room, or you go into a guest room and it feels static or not stale, because it usually looks welcoming, but it doesn't feel welcoming. And perhaps that's because it's not on the main beaten track of the home and it's not collecting beautiful energy. But that's what came into me for an example of the yellow. And the green, somewhere pulsating with positive energy, I would say the kitchen, the heart of the home.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to stop you there because I was excited about your examples and things were coming into my mind. So very powerful tool there.
Yes, and wonderful. And if your guest room is yellow, that's probably a good thing. The feng shui experts say that you don't want your guest room being too nice, or your guests might end up staying a little longer than you want them to. You might want to keep that one a yellow zone. depending on the time. So, but yes, the next step is, you know, okay, I have these zones identified. What do I do? And often what people, the tendency is wanting to jump in and fix a red zone, because that will be the spot that's bothering somebody most. And what I recommend is, again, especially with the red zones, baby steps, tiny steps. So maybe what is the most powerful approach, so that you start to notice what it feels like when your space feels really wonderful, because again, you're training yourself to notice what feels good, is to maybe take a yellow zone, for example. And I love your example of the kitchen, because I always recommend that where possible, people focus on the places of the house that are connected to self-care and nurturing. And the kitchen absolutely is the center for feeding, gathering, and it is the heart of the house. So just taking little projects in the kitchen, like cleaning out the refrigerator, cleaning out a cupboard, and doing it automatically. So it might be that you open up your cutlery drawer and notice that lots of crumbs have fallen in. So you might find that it takes 7 minutes to clean out your cutlery drawer and wipe it out, and you feel so much better. So that if you just open up your eyes and start to shift things bit by bit, so it doesn't feel like a big project, it becomes a new way of being in your home, where you're noticing, not to the point of being obsessive, but just that healthy awareness, and you clear things out continuously, because this is not something that you do on a Saturday morning and it's done. Just the same as looking after your physical body is a daily practice, looking after your home is a daily practice. Even if it's already beautiful, it still requires daily care. So when you're trying to shift the energy to bring in more of these green zones, it requires continuous attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I would recommend shifting yellow zones to green, or if you're going to take on some of those red zones, do it 15 minutes at a time until you sort of build your muscles and feel ready for more.
Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you, I had a conversation with my sister who lives in Newfoundland, and she brought something to my attention that was, you know, preparing for our time together. And she said, well, you know, day after day, there may be something very small in your home that irritates you, but you're
mm-hmm.
oblivious to it. But every day, you're pounding your head against the wall. and it brings you irritation. And what she had suggested is to pay attention and identify those small items and then remove them. And so I did take her guidance for about a week, and she was absolutely right. Absolutely. So have you run across that in your classes that you give? Just little things that people are unconscious to, but it's like a shower faucet that doesn't quite work, or it's a drawer that doesn't quite fit, or it could be a curtain rod that's a little off center. Do people speak about those things?
Yes, absolutely, and we run into this all the time, especially with getting houses ready to sell, because when we come in with our list, we find out that the homeowner has the same list, it's just that they haven't been able to get to it. So, you know, it might be tightening a towel bar or fixing a doorknob. We had somebody who... the doorknob came off in their hand every time, and it had been like that for a long time, and then finally just got a handyman in and fixed it, and it was something that was a daily aggravation and only took minutes to fix. So, and again, going taking that example, your home doesn't reflect who you are, it reflects how you are. So if you are tolerating little annoyances in your home, you can be absolutely guaranteed that that pattern is out there in your work and in other parts of your life. So as you start to, it's like developing a mantra as I notice and take care of the details in my life. And the red zones, I said before, it's, I wanted to explain a little bit, and here we're just scratching the surface. I mean, this, as I said, you can get this concept easily, but the making the deep shifts takes time. But the way we go about it, it really becomes a lot of fun, because your home is such a safe place to practice compared to out there in the big wide world. So if you think of a red zone and the underlying emotions, is that a red zone comes to be through patterns of thought like, you know, I don't have time, I feel so overwhelmed, what's wrong with me, what's wrong with my life, why do I have to be the one to do this, I don't know what to do, I don't have enough money, I'm exhausted. And you start to listen. Once you get that awareness, you go, oh my goodness, no wonder it's like this, listen to what I'm saying to myself. So it's you when you start to recognize the underlying emotions, then it becomes much easier to change, because you realize it's really not about what's there. What's there is just giving you feedback about what your thoughts are. And the same with the yellow zone. The yellow zone is often a reflection of someone who is where safety is important, or they don't trust their taste. If I keep my house like this, it's good enough, and I'm not going to risk embarrassing myself by expressing myself with colors and having it look bad. So they stay very safe, or they don't want to change because they're interpret wanting to change something as what they have being not good enough, And really important to understand in this is that it's not about what's good enough. It's about expressing yourself creatively and understanding that you have the power to choose. And once you start to see those changes, even if it's just noticing that your bath towel is worn out and going getting a beautiful one that just feels good and looks good and brings you joy, those are the little examples that when you get enough of them going on in your daily life, it actually does shift how you feel. And I've had people tell me that there was one person who said she had, after taking the course with me that goes into the book more in depth, that strangers were coming up to her and telling her that they thought that something looked different about her, that she just had more spark and joy. People could see it in how she was carrying herself. So it's really quite phenomenal that these changes in your home are really about changing your little script that you're running inside your head, with often without noticing it.
And wanted to share with our environmentally conscious people that if you are exchanging an old bath towel for something that may be more visually appealing, there are 101 uses for that old bath towel. So,
yes.
And the word vintage comes to mind, consignment, recycle.
Well, it's wonderful with all this environment, because, and I'm glad you brought that up, because sometimes it's the environmentally conscious people who are paralyzed because they don't want to throw anything out for fear that it won't be disposed of responsibly. So there are wonderful ways, and there are wonderful ways to dispose of things, and things like cloth and towels can be reused and for as you say, 101 different things, and so it's just really finding the best way to clear things out and finding them a new home and recognizing that some things won't have a new home and that might be fine. So, but yes, absolutely, being environmentally conscious is important. And more of the companies that take things away do dispose of them in an environmentally responsible way. So anybody who's looking at using one of those services, ask them what they do, whether they take them to the public dump, because there are private companies that go to great lengths to distribute things and salvage things responsibly after they leave your house. So I would encourage people to ask questions of those companies.
Excellent. Now, if you were going to share three of your top tips for our listeners who are intrigued by the concept of shifting the green, you don't want to shift green.
you can maintain it. You can expand it.
Okay. Well, three top tips for shifting the zones in your house. What would they be?
Well, I would follow the process of our three steps. It would be to have a look at what's around you and notice how you feel and start to get excited with what you notice. So it's training yourself to get excited because you're starting to notice, and that's your point of power. So get excited about knowing that you have a choice. Think about what you want, because until you know what you want, nothing is going to shift. Mm-hmm. And the third thing I would do is take baby steps. Take baby steps, but take them every single day. So spend at least 5 minutes a day, set a timer, and see how much you can do in your kitchen. I know that I can unload the dishwasher in 4 minutes, and there's nothing nicer than having a dishwasher in receiving condition at all times. So so those would be my three tips, is notice what's around you and how you feel. Train yourself to think about what you want gently while feeling good, and then take action every single day in baby steps, and what will happen is that you will start to get ideas, you will get creative, and you will start finding yourself pulled into action without even having to make the conscious decision. You will just, and again, I get emails from people excited saying, I just cleaned out a kitchen cupboard and I didn't even mean to. You know, my kids were almost late for school because I started cleaning out the cupboard. So it's those kinds of things, that those little shifts, those that bring such joy and tell you that you're on your way.
Excellent. Now, how have people reacted to the book House Heal?
Well, I'm happy to say that people who have read the book are over the moon. I got an email from one woman who said, I stayed up all night reading your book and had huge shifts, not only in ideas for her house, but in insights into family relationships, because believe it or not, sort of further along the book, when people are comfortable with the principles, we get into dealings with other people, because that's often a big factor in a home, whether you live with other people or presumably you have people coming into your home even if they don't live with you. And it's about bringing that same sense of awareness and kindness into relationships. So the reactions have been, this is what's happening in my home, but this is also what's happening in my life. So people are recognizing that the shift comes in how they feel. So it's that excitement, that empowerment, and knowing that it's a path. And I think that just that breakthrough of being unburdened, of feeling like they have a task that is unfinished hanging over them, but instead understand that once you embark on this, nothing is going to stop you, and it doesn't matter if it takes you 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years to have that complete transformation. You know, what you said, people will look back and go, oh my goodness, I can't believe I live like that, but that doesn't matter. It's where you are right now and how you feel. So and one of the things that I really love is hearing from people who had access to the early teaching even before my book, because those people have had access to the teaching longer and tell me, you know, just last week I was bumped into somebody who had taken the course and said, oh, I'm so glad I saw you because I think of you every day. And so the teaching, because it's so natural, it's based on timeless principles. Yes, the context of home came through my teaching, but the principles that it's based on belong to everyone. They're just universal principles. So it stays, it's imprinted. So you can't forget this. It's like riding a bicycle in the sense that once you see what's possible, you can't not see it anymore. And that's what feels so good. So the response is people feeling better about themselves, and it's almost like the what happens in the house goes, oh yeah, my house is more beautiful, but I feel so much better. So that's the reactions that the book is designed to get, and that's what I'm hearing, and it's really lovely.
Excellent. Now, people are listening. They love what you're talking about. They want to have that book in their hands, or they would like to contact you with a question. How do people do that? How can they get a hold of their book? How can they get a hold of you? And my final question is, what's coming up next for you? So let's talk about how they can get a hold of your book.
Okay. Well, the most important thing that they need to know is my website, because that will have all the information updated on an ongoing basis. So the website is Househeal, Househeal, Househeal.com. And anyone who has a question can email me directly at Sarah, S-A-R-A, no H on Sarah, S-A-R-A, at Househeal.com. And to get a copy of the book, it is available through Amazon, wherever you are. So whether it's Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, the book is, as thank you, you've mentioned many times, Househeal, Transform Your Life Through the Power of Home. And if someone wants a signed copy of the book, then do contact me directly. There is a link on my website where you can order that directly. But if you don't care about it being signed, you can get it through Amazon, and it is available in electronic versions as well. And all that information is on the website. Now, as far as what's coming up next, and I've said that the teaching, the concept of receiving condition, show condition, the traffic light, red, yellow, green, the three keys, awareness, desire, willingness. You know, I can explain that all very quickly. Somebody can get that in the book through reading the book. The fact is that no matter how much you get it, understand it, the teaching, the shifting behaviors, beliefs, takes time and support. And sometimes we can't always see our own thought patterns. So what I'm in the process of creating is a 12-week course that is delivered online, but with a lot of personal interaction and personal exercises so that you can do this work on a deeper personal level and get ongoing support that you really are experiencing deep change that will continue to grow. Because this, as I said before, this isn't something that gets done. This is something that you continuously, like I said, you don't want to, even when you have the green zones, they require care and awareness to match where you want to take yourself in life from here. And that's going to be shifting and growing always. So this course, right now the target date to launch it is June the 1st, but anyone who is interested in getting advanced information can go onto my website at househeal.com and sign up to be on the priority list to get the first information available on that course. And I will be sending out some extra goodies and tidbits leading up to that time. So if anyone's interested, the best thing to do is to go to my website, get on the list, and you'll get all of the current information.
Excellent. Now, I have one very important question to ask you, Sarah.
Yes.
Will you come back again on the show? I loved talking about this.
Oh, I would absolutely love it, and there are going to be so many stories, and this is just growing, and absolutely, absolutely yes, I would be delighted.
I love the absolutely yeses.
green light.
So, Sarah, thank you very, very much for being on the show and sharing your, not only your knowledge and your experiences, but your heart and your passion. That means so much. And also putting it in such an honest, caring context. I'm so impressed with your work. So once again, for our listeners, we're talking to Sarah Brown Crowder, the author of House Heal, who will be coming back on the show soon, I hope. And I would like to invite everybody to stay tuned. We're going to move into another segment. It's called Soul Nudge, and we'll be talking about a topic that everybody may be familiar with at some point in their lives. It's a topic called criticism, and the antidote is called consider your source. So we will be back shortly. Have a wonderful day in Toronto, Sarah, and we look forward to having you on the show again.
Thank you, Mildred Lynn. I look forward to it as well.
Okay, bye for now.
Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Yes, we've added to our lineup of lively, thought-provoking shows. But don't forget our original Sunday morning lineup at 10:30 a.m. Join us for Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn McDonald every first Sunday. Revolution with Heisi Lutmers every second Sunday. Convergence with John Carosella every third Sunday. And our popular on-air call-in show, the fourth Sunday of every month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows, LIVE.
Hello, this is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and I'm your host for Healing Conversations, live from Sebastopol, California. We hope that you're enjoying the show today. I'd love to introduce a new segment. It's called Soul Nudge. And the topic for today is criticism. I'm sure we all know what it's like to be criticized, and I'd like to share with you some guidelines that may prove useful in a practical sense when you're trying to navigate your way through the situation. We'll also draw on the wisdom of communications expert Jack Griffin. So please sit down, have a nice cup of tea, and I'd love to share my thoughts and Jack Griffin's guidelines on criticism. It's called Got Criticism? Always consider the source. The best advice I've ever received about dealing with criticism was delivered by my mother. I was about 12 years old and my feelings were hurt. After listening to my story of woe, she said three words that caught my attention, spun me around, and changed my life. Here are her words. Consider the source. Since then, This simple phrase has saved me countless hours of trying to figure out the who, what, where, when, and why of my erroneous ways as I walk through life. Why is Consider the Source so powerful when dealing with criticism? Well, I've come up with 5 reasons for your consideration. First, it provides a framework to help decipher if you trust and value the opinion of the person who's delivering the criticism. Second, it gives you a chance to decide whether the feedback is valid or not. Number 3, for some magical reason, Consider the Source has the ability to temporarily diffuse emotions. It's just like a dab of aloe vera on a burning hot sunburn. Ouch! It means that you have an opportunity to be fully present and to think more clearly without the cloudiness or fuzziness of revved up emotions and feelings. Number 4, if you decide that the person who's delivering the criticism is a trusted source and the feedback is valid, you can make the choice to constructively learn from the experience and then to integrate it into your way of showing up in this world. On the other hand, if you decide that the criticism is not being delivered from a place of integrity and accuracy and goodwill, you can sweep it up into the dustbin or even under the carpet and just carry on with your day, secure in the knowledge that you at least took the time to process the criticism in a healthy, open, and proactive way. Meaning, at the end of the day, you don't act or feel like a victim. The best news is that, like most things in life, the more you practice, the better you become at automatically moving into Consider the Source mode when criticism strikes. Let's say you're being criticized at work by someone you report to. What can you do? What is the best approach? Do you have a strategy? According to communications expert Jack Griffin, there are 6 steps that you can use to respond to negative feedback in a constructive manner. Here are some tidbits from his guidelines, and I'll throw in my 2 cents worth too. Step 1, accept criticism as an opportunity. All criticism, even unmerited criticism, is useful to you. After all, it may actually point out things that you're doing ineffectively or poorly. Things that with a little bit of help and guidance and awareness, you could do better. From my perspective, my 2 cents, I really agree that criticism is useful. But I would also lean in the direction of using Consider the Source to determine just how useful the feedback is to you in the context of your personal work ethic, your personal value system, your personal aspirations, and your goals. In step 2, Jack Griffin invites you to fight the impulse of responding defensively. He shares, listen and learn. This is great guidance. When being criticized, it's really important to have the presence of mind not to get caught up in an emotional, knee-jerk reaction. If you feel yourself tilting that way, keep repeating over and over, "That's interesting." This is equivalent to counting to 10. And come to think of it, perhaps you can say, "That's interesting," and count to 10 too. In step 3, Jack Griffin shares that it's important to realize that the criticism is simply a perception, nothing more. I'm going to repeat that. The criticism is a perception, nothing more. And then he goes on to say, explore with yourself and the other person the reasons behind the criticism. I'd like to add that from my experience, critical thoughts and actions often sprout from the garden of misunderstanding and assumption. I've also discovered that an honest chat over a cup of tea or coffee is often an acceptable antidote. That being said, this strategy only works when there's a certain level of openness on both sides, a task orientation, or a willingness to listen and learn. If these 3 items are in short supply, you're wasting your breath and your time. Moving on to step four, our communications expert Jack Griffin advises this. Don't meekly accept unjust or unfound criticism, but don't reject it either. Learn from it. Learn about creating more positive impressions. To me, this step is an invitation to put your best foot forward. It also suggests that we all need to learn to value and appreciate ourselves enough to stand in our power. In my life, I like to encourage people to back up critical statements about others with facts and examples. So I usually interject two questions. Can you help me understand where you're coming from? And if the shoe was on the other foot, what would you do? Moving on to step five. Seize the opportunity to respond to criticism to communicate in a way that can strengthen and enhance your relationship with the other person. This is also good guidance. I feel that this means making sure that your communication addresses three key areas. I hear what you're saying. I will review the problem or situation, and I appreciate your input. Last but not least, we've reached the final step. Jack Griffin suggests that while listening to criticism, demonstrate that you're hearing the criticism. And one way to do this is to monitor your nonverbal communication. He offers four samples and one tip. So here we go. When being criticized or receiving criticism, make sure you make and maintain eye contact. So important. Monitor your own signals of resistance, such as a hand placed over your mouth or on your forehead, or arms folded across your chest or your solar plexus. Such gestures are powerful signals of resistance and basically tell people that you're determined not to hear what they're saying. If possible, be seated during your discussion, since standing often suggests and promotes face-to-face confrontation. On the other hand, if you must stand, it's best to keep your hands by your sides to avoid the temptation to place your hands on your hips. And this non-verbally suggests, hands on your hips, it suggests defiance and sends a provocative message. Your objective is not to appear passive, but open and willing to listen and learn and change and cooperate when receiving criticism or negative feedback. I feel that these are great tips that can be applied to anyone in any situation. It's wise to anticipate that somewhere along the happy trail, you and I and everybody else will be the recipient of negative feedback. It happens to everyone, so don't take it personally. So close your eyes, take a deep breath, and really let this sink into yourself. I hope you enjoyed this commentary called Got Criticism? Consider the Source. I'd like to thank my mother, Audrey McDonald, for being the person who introduced this very valuable concept with me. This is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and I hope that you're enjoying the show. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for joining us. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is Deb Caracella. Please join us next time on Firefly Willows LIVE for A Shamanic Life with John Caracella, Tuesday evening at 8 p.m.